Chapter 12. In a Primarch's Shadow.
The gunship bursts across the sky, rattling around us in its ferocious race southward. It is all too easy to imagine the thick Armageddon clouds left in turmoil in our wake. Wind roars into the crew compartment through the open bulkhead door. As is my right, I am first at the portal, gripping the edge of the airlock with one hand as the wind claws at my tabard and parchment scrolls. Beneath us, the city slides by, towers aiming up, streets laid flat. The former are aflame, the latter are flooded by ash and the enemy. Already, many of the city's outermost sectors are burning. Hell's Reach is what it is, an industrial city devoted to the production of fuel. There is much that will burn here. The flames choke the sky as the ring of fire swallowing the hive's edges creeps ever inward. The reports of refugees spilling into the city's core have increased tenfold. Housing them is no longer even the greatest problem. The trouble in the avenues where the civilians flock is that Saren's redeployment of his armor division suffers crippling congestion. I do not judge him for this. His mastery of the city after arriving in the final weeks, only barely before we did, has been as efficient as could be expected from a human mind under such duress. I recall the initial briefings when he was stifled by large sections of the civilian populace, refusing to abandon their homes even in the face of invasion. In truth, it is not as if the city was built with an abundance of bunkers to house refugees anyway. With reluctance, he had allowed them to remain where they were, knowing the problem was in part a self-correcting one. As districts fell to the invaders, the civilian death toll would be catastrophic. "Well," he had said one night to the gathered commanders, "it will mean fewer refugees in the siege itself." I had admired him greatly in that moment. His merciless clarity was most commendable. With a lurch, the Thunderhawk begins its descent. I brace myself, whispering words of reverence to the machine spirit within the propulsion engines, now attached to my armor. The jump pack is bulky and ancient, the metal pitted and scarred and in dire need of repainting, but its link to my armor is without flaw. I blink-click the activation rune, and the hum of the backpack's internal systems joins the growl of my active armor. I see Storm Herald. Over my shoulder, Artarian sees the same.
"Blood of Dawn," he says,
his voice uncharacteristically soft. The entire scene is tainted by the grey dust clouds in the air from fallen buildings. In this cloud of grey, half buried in the debris of the exploded buildings, the Titan kneels in the street. 60 meters of walking lethality, an unstoppable weapons platform with the ornate cathedral adorning its shoulders, kneels in the street, defeated. Around it is the devastation of several fallen habitation towers. The invaders, curse their soulless lives, had set the surrounding hab blocks to detonate and collapse on the Titan.
"They have brought an Emperor-class Titan to its knees,"
Artarian says.
"I never thought I would live to see such a thing."
Hundreds of them swarm the streets now, climbing onto the defeated god machine's back with grappling hooks and boosting up there on burning thruster packs. They crawl across its dust-coated armor like insectile vermin.
"Grimaldas,"
the Titan hails me, and suddenly it is so obvious why the voice is pained. Not from agony, from shame. She has advanced ahead of her Skitari phalanxes and is undefended against this massed infantry assault. "I am here, Zaha."
"I feel them, like a million spiders across my skin. I cannot stand. I cannot rise."
"Make ready," I vox to my brothers. Then to the humbled princeps. "We are about to engage the enemy."
"I fear them,"
she says again, and I cannot tell from her machine voice if she is bitter, delirious, or both.
"They are killing my people, my prayer speakers, my faithful adepts.
I am not blind to the meaning in her words. To the machine cult, each death was more than a mortal tragedy. It was the loss of knowledge and perspective that might never be recovered.
They are inside me, Grimaldus, like parasites, violating the Cathedral of Sanctuary, climbing inside my bones, drilling toward my heart.
I do not reply to her as I watch the crumbled cityscape below. Instead, I tense myself for a moment's sensory dislocation and hurl myself out into the sky.
Grimaldus was first to leap from the circling Thunderhawk. Artarian, ever his shadow and still bearing his banner, was only seconds behind. Priamus, his blade in hand, came next. Nerevar and Cador followed, the first of them leaping into a dive, the latter merely stepping out in an uncomplicated plummet. Last of all was Bastilan, the sergeant's insignia on his helm, catching the dull evening light. He voxed to the pilot, wishing him well, and drew his weapons before falling into air. Altitude gauges on retinal displays showed fast-falling numbers, the digital readouts a blur as the knights dropped from the sky. Beneath them, the kneeling god machine presented a huge target. The multi-leveled cathedral on its shoulders was like a city in miniature, a city of spires, bristling with weapons batteries and crawling with alien vermin. The knights saw the aliens as they descended, the beasts clambering up on tethered lanyards or flying up on primitive rocket packs, laying siege to the stricken Titan. Storm Herald itself was a pathetic statue depicting its own failure. It was driven to one knee, buried to the waist in the debris of 6 or 7 fallen Hablock towers. The avenue was in ruin around it, where the detonated buildings had collapsed and leveled the city flat. The Titan's arm guns, as large as some habitation towers themselves, were grey-white with dust and resting on the mounds of broken brick, twisted steel supports and rockcrete stone. Grimaldus held off firing his boosters to slow his freefall.
"Come down in the courtyard in the centre of the cathedral," he voxed to the others.
Their acknowledgements came immediately. In turn, each of them engaged their jump packs, arresting their dives into more controlled descents. Grimaldus was the last to fire his boosters, and the first to hit the ground. His boots thudded onto the paved courtyard, smashing the precious mosaics into gravel beneath his feet. Immediately, he leaned to the side, compensating for the angle of the ground. Storm Herald's defeated posture was tilting the entire cathedral forward almost 30 degrees. The courtyard was modest, ringed by 9 plain marble statues that each stood 4 meters tall. In each of the cardinal directions, a set of open doors led into the cathedral itself. The mosaic tiles on the floor depicted the black-and-white bisected cyborged skull of the machine cult of Mars. Grimaldus had come down onto the dark eye socket of the skull's human side, crushing the black tiles to powder underfoot. Nothing moved nearby. The sounds of battle, of looting, of desecration, these all came from within the surrounding building. Priamus landed with a skid, his armoured boots tearing at the mosaics and shearing them off in a wave of broken pebbles. His blade, chained to his wrist, crackled into life. Nerevar, Cador and Bastilan were altogether more graceful in their landings. The sergeant came down in the shadow of one of the tilted statues. Its stern face eclipsed the setting sun.
"These are the Primarchs,"
he said to the others as they readied their weapons. All heads turned towards Bastilan. He was right. As representations of the Primarchs went, they were plain to the point of almost being crude. The sons of the Emperor were usually depicted in grandeur and glory, rather than by sculptures so subtle and austere. There was Sanguinius, Lord of the Blood Angels, prominently unwinged, with a childlike face, lowered in repose. And there Gilliman of the Ultramarines, his robed form so much slenderer than any other depiction of him that the knights had seen before. In one hand he clutched an open tome, the other was raised to the sky, as if he was caught and forever frozen in a moment of great oratory. Jagatai Khan was bare-chested, bearing a curved blade in his hands and looking to the left, as if staring at the distant horizon. His hair was shaggy and long, whereas in so many masterpieces it was shaven but for a topknot. Next to him, Korax, the Prince of Ravens, wore a plain mask that was utterly featureless but for the eyes. It was as if he was unwilling to show his face in the company of his brothers, hiding his visage behind an actor's mask. Ferus Manus and Vulcan shared a plinth. The brothers were bareheaded, and the only two Primarchs sculpted here in armour. Both wore vests of mail, the fine links of chain on Manus's breast a counterpoint to the larger scales adorning Vulcan's. They stood back to back, facing in opposite directions, both carved to bear hammers in each hand. Leman Russ of the Wolves stood with legs apart, head cast back facing the sky. Whereas the other sons of the Emperor wore robes or armour, Russ was clad in rags sculpted over his chiselled musculature. He was also the only Primarch with tensed fists, as if he stared into the heavens awaiting some grim arrival. A robed figure, hooded yet visibly slender to the point of emaciation, clutched the hilt of a winged blade, its tip between the statue's bare feet. Here was the lion, depicted as a warrior monk, eyes closed in silent contemplation. And, last of all, rising above Bastilan, was Rogel Dorn. Dorn stood apart from his brothers, neither facing his kin nor looking into the skies above. His regal visage was aimed at the ground to his left, as if the Primarch stared at something vital only he could see. The robe he wore was plainer than those adorning his brother's icons, though it showed a cross on its breast, sculpted with care. Although he had been the Golden Lord, the commander of the Imperial Fists, his personal heraldry had inspired that of his Templar sons who followed. His hands were what drew the knight's eyes more than any other aspect in this gathering of demigods. One was held to his chest, the fingertips joined to the cross there, frozen in mid-stroke. The other was held out in the direction Dorn stared, palm up and kindly, as if offering aid to one who would rise from the floor. It was quite the most humble and exquisite rendition of their gene-father Grimaldus had ever laid eyes on. He fought the sudden burning urge to fall to his knees in reverent prayer.
"This is an omen,"
Bastilan continued. Grimaldus could barely believe only a handful of seconds had passed since the sergeant last spoke.
"It is," the reclusiarch replied. "We will purify this temple under the gaze of our forefather. Dorn watches us, brothers. Let us make him proud of the day he sired the first Templar." We move without hesitation and without caution through the cathedral. The angled floor is an irritation that I've managed to blank from my mind by the time the third alien is dead. Room by room, we move in unison. The cathedral is divided into a series of chambers ringing the courtyard, each one with its own stained glass windows, now shattered and gaping like missing teeth, each room reaching high up with a pointed ceiling ending in the spire above. The slaughter is easy, almost mindless. Primus is like a wolf on the leash, eager to run ahead on his own. My patience is wearing thin with him. Each chamber also shows its own unique desecration. Tech adepts and ecclesiarchy priests lie dead and butchered, their bodies in pieces across the mosaic floors. Unarmed as they were, they offered little resistance to the rampaging invaders. Bookshelves are overturned, ceramic ornaments shattered. I would never put feral destruction past this Xenos breed, but it almost seems as if the greenskins sought something specific in their rabid assault.
"The articulation structures are sealed. My bones are defended by internal forces. My heart core is cut off from the parasites."
"Ambush or not, it is disgusting that it took them even this long to achieve such basic necessities." "We are retaking the Cathedral of Sanctuary," I tell her. "Resistance is minimal, Zaha, but you must stand. They are still coming. Bring the cathedral out of range of borders, or we will be overwhelmed."
"I cannot stand,"
she says.
What a sin it is for such a majestic warrior to speak with such shameful defeat tainting her words. Were she one of my men, I would kill her for such dishonor. Slowly, by strangulation. Cowardice does not deserve the rush of a blade.
I have tried,
she intones. The emotion coloring her machine voice brings my bile rising. For all I know, she could be weeping. My disgust is so powerful, I must fight the need to vomit. Try harder, I breathe into the vox and sever the link. We fight our way to the outer battlements at Storm Herald's front, where the incline allows for easy boarding. An orc's fat hand slaps on the red metal of the battlement's edge, and the brute hauls itself up. My pistol meets its face, the heat exchanger veins hissing against its skin. It has a moment to bawl its hatred at me before I pull the trigger. What remains of the alien falls from its handholds, tumbling to the ground, burning briefly on its way down as a living torch of white-hot fire. The battlements resemble a true siege in all respects. The last remaining tech adepts and priests defend the cathedral against boarding aliens, though no more than a small cluster remain. Few humans, augmented or otherwise, are a match for one of these beasts. Primus slips the leash of discipline. His charge carries him ahead, his sword flaring with light each time its power field soars into alien flesh. My brothers lay into the enemy along the besieged wall with bolter and blade. The few servitor-manned spire turrets that had been spitting solid shots into the mass of orcs fall silent, not willing to risk striking any of us. You will do penance for this, Primus. He doesn't answer.
For the Emperor!
He cries into the vox.
For Dawn!
In the pockets of battle, where none of us stand, the turrets open fire once again. At least their servitors are worth something, then. The orcs turn from butchering the few priests still standing. Their bestial faces are afire with brutish, eager emotion as they come for us. One of them, throne of the Emperor, one of them dwarfs his piggish brethren. His armor makes him twice the size of us, looking like scrap metal and primitive chugging power generators bolted onto an exoskeletal frame. His hands are industrial claws that look as if they could peel a tank apart without effort. He even kills his own kin as he strides towards us on the inclined floor. His claws swing, battering his lesser allies aside, hurling them against the cathedral wall or over the battlement's edge. I raise my Crozius in a two-handed grip. That one is mine, I tell my brothers. Dawn is watching this.
You asked to see me, sir.
Tomas didn't bother to straighten his crumpled work overalls as he stood at what could loosely be called attention. Around him, the command chamber was its usual bustling hive of activity. A junior staff officer bumped him as she passed. Tomas said nothing. He'd worked 15 hours straight today, on a dock backed up with dozens and dozens of ships, with almost no room to unload. 15 hours of shouting, of broken voxcasters and no tech spare to fix them, of cargo being dumped wherever it could be dumped, which was inevitably the wrong place, and the most inconvenient one for someone else, necessitating its removal minutes later when another worker's already fouled up work was fouled up even further. Frankly, he didn't much care if he got shoved over onto the ground. Maybe he could curl up and get some damn sleep. Sir, he prompted. Saren finally looked up from the hololithic table. The colonel had aged in the last week. Magherinus could see it clearly. He looked as tired and bone-achingly sick of it all as Tomas felt.
What?
Saren asked, narrowing his bloodshot eyes.
Oh, yes, Dockmaster.
Saren looked back down at the hololithic display.
I need your crews to speed up. Is that understood?
Magherinus blinked.
I'm sorry, sir. I didn't quite hear you. I need...
Saren didn't look up.
Your crews to speed up their work. And the reports I'm getting from the docks show they are at a standstill. We are talking about significant portions of the north and east perimeters of the city, Dockmaster. I need to move troops. I need to store materiel. I need you to do your job.
McHernus looked around the room in disbelief, unsure how to respond.
What would you have me do, Colonel? What is there that I can possibly do? Your job, McHernus. Have you even seen the docks recently, Colonel?
Saren looked up again, laughing without even a shred of humour.
Do I look like I have seen anything except casualty reports recently? I can't do anything about the docks.
McHernus shook his head, a sense of unreality settling over him.
I'm not a miracle worker. I appreciate you have an intense workload. That's not the half of it. We're dealing with a backlog of weeks, months even, and no room to handle anything. Nevertheless, I need more from you and your crews. Of course, sir. I'll be back in a moment. I feel the sudden need to piss expensive white wine and turn everything I touch into gold. This is no laughing matter. And I'm not laughing, you pompous son of a bitch. Work harder. Do more. Are you insane? There's nothing I can do.
Nearby officers glanced his way. Saren sighed and rubbed his closed eyes with the tips of his fingers.
I respect the difficulties of your position, Dockmaster, but this is the first week of the siege. This is only going to get worse. We are all going to sleep much less, and we are all going to work much harder. Furthermore, I understand that you are sweating blood in an underappreciated duty, but you are not the only one suffering. You at least are guaranteed to live longer than many of us. I have men and women in the streets fighting and dying for your home, so that you may continue to complain at how I crack the whip over you. I have hundreds of thousands of citizens under arms facing the greatest alien invasion force the world has ever seen. Sir,
McHernus took a breath.
You will shut up and let me finish, Dockmaster. I have platoons of men and women lost behind the advancing enemy line, no doubt hacked to pieces by the axes of barbarous Xenos monsters. I have armor divisions running out of fuel because of resupply difficulties in the embattled sectors. I have an Emperor-class Titan on its knees because its commander was too angry to think clearly. I have a city with its edges on fire and its population in rout with nowhere to run to. I have tens of thousands of soldiers dying to prevent the enemy from reaching the Hell's Highway. People dying for a road, Dockmaster. Because once the beasts reach the city's spine, we are all going to die a great deal faster. Now, am I making myself perfectly clear when I tell you that while I have sympathy for your difficulties, I also expect you to work through them? We are, just to be sure, no longer speaking past one another. We are, for the record, now on the same page.
McHernus swallowed and nodded. Good. Saren smiled.
That's good. What can you do for me, Dockmaster? I'll speak to my crews, Colonel. My thanks for understanding the situation we are in, Thomas. You are dismissed. Now, someone raise a reliable vox signal to the Reclusiac. I need to know how close he is to getting that Titan walking.
In the cognition chamber, Grimalda stood before the crippled Zaha. His armor's calm, measured hum was marred by a mechanical ticking sound at random intervals. Something, some internal system linking the power pack to the suit of armor, was malfunctioning. His skull helm, with its silver faceplate, was painted with alien blood. His armor's left knee joint clicked as he moved, the servos inside damaged and in need of reverent maintenance by chapter artificers. Where scrolls of written oaths had hung from his pauldrons, the armor was burned, the ceramite cracked. But he was alive. At his side, Artarion looked similarly battered. The others remained in the cathedral above, maintaining a vigil now the orcs were punished and slain for their blasphemy.
Your Titan, Grimaldus uttered the words, is purged. Now stand, Princeps.
Zaha floated in the milky waters, not hearing him, not even moving. She looked as if she had drowned.
Storm Herald has taken her,
Moderati Casimir said, his voice low. She was ancient and had oppressed her will over the Titan's core for many years. She still lives, the knight noted. Only in the flesh and not for much longer. Casimir looked pained even explaining this. His eyes were bloodshot and rimmed by dark circles. The machine spirit of an Imperator is so much stronger than any soul you can imagine, Reclusiarch. These precious engines are born as lesser reflections of the machine god himself. They carry his will and his strength. No machine spirit is the equal of a living soul, said Grimaldus. She was strong. I sensed it in her. You understand nothing of the metaphysics at work here. Who are you to lecture us in this way? We were linked to the Titan's core at the end. You are nothing, and an outsider. Grimaldus turned to the crew members in their control seats, his broken armor joints snarling. I shed blood in the defense of your engine, as did my brothers. You would be torn from your thrones and buried in the rubble of your own failure had I not saved your lives. The next time you call a Templar nothing is the moment I kill you where you sit, little man. You are nothing without your Titan, and your Titan lives because of me. Remember to whom you speak. The crew shared uncomfortable glances.
He meant no offense,
one of the tech priests mumbled through a facially implanted voxcaster. I do not care what he intended. I deal in realities. Now, make this Titan walk.
We can't.
Do it anyway. Storm Herald was supposed to move in synergy with the 199th Steel Legion Armored Division over an hour ago, and they are in full retreat due to being unsupported. The delay is finished with. Get back in the fight.
Without a princeps? How are we to do that?
Casimir shook his head.
She is gone from us, Reclusiarch. The shame of it all, the rage of defeat. We all felt the Titan rush into her. Her mind has joined the union of all previous princeps, amalgamated in the Titan's core. Her soul is buried as surely as her body would be in a grave.
She lives.
The knight narrowed his eyes.
For now. But this is how princeps die.
Grimaldus turned back to the amniotic coffin and the unmoving woman within.
That is unacceptable.
It is the truth.
Then the truth, the Reclusiarch growled, is unacceptable.
She wept in the silence, the way one weeps when truly alone, when there is no shame to be found in being seen by others. Around her was nothingness absolute. No sound, no movement, no color. She floated in this nothingness, neither cold nor hot, with no reference of direction or sensation. And she wept. Upon opening her eyes moments before, a thrill of fear had sliced up her spine. She did not know who she was, where she was, or why she was here. Her memories, the fractured, flashing images that were all that kept her mind from being completely hollow, were of 100 worlds she could not recall seeing, and 100 wars she could not remember fighting. Worse, they were each tainted by an emotion she had never felt, something inhuman, abrasive, sinister, and partway between exaltation and terror. She saw these moments of memory and felt the unnerving presence of another being's emotions instead of her own. It was like drowning. Drowning in someone else's dreams. Who had she been before? Did it even matter? She slipped deeper. What remaining sense of self existed began to break away and diminish, sacrificed to buy a peaceful, silent death. Then the voice came, and it ruined everything.
Zaha, it said.
With the word came a weak understanding, an awareness. She had memories of her own. At least she had once possessed such things. It suddenly seemed wrong to no longer have access to her own recollections. As she resurfaced slowly, the infiltrating memories returned. The wars, the emotions, the fire and the fury. Instinctively, she pulled away again, preparing to return deeper within the nothingness. Anything to escape the memories belonging to another soul.
Zaha, the voice clawed after her. You swore to me.
Another layer of comprehension returned. Within the revelation were her own emotions, waiting for her to reclaim them. The overwhelming sensory storm of the other mind's memories no longer frightened her. They angered her. She would not be so easily shackled. No false soul's thoughts would conquer her like this.
You swore to me, the voice said, that you would walk.
She smiled in the nothingness, rising through it now like an ascending angel. Storm Herald's memories assailed her with renewed vigor, but she cast them aside like leaves in the wind.
You are right, Grimaldus, she told the voice. I did swear I would walk.
Stand, he demanded, stern and cold and glowering. Zaha, stand.
I will.
The voice came without warning, emerging from the vox speakers on the coffin.
I will.
Crew members flinched back from the sound, their hands white-knuckled as they clutched the backrests of their thrones. Only Grimaldus remained where he was, face to face with the glass sarcophagus, his blood-smeared skull mask glaring into the milky depths. The old woman's body twitched once, and her head rose. She looked around slowly, her augmetic gaze at last coming to rest on the night before her. Rubble scattered in an avalanche, and a dust cloud rose again as the wreckage of fallen buildings went tumbling aside. With a thunderous grinding of gears and the clanging hammering of a multitude of tank-sized pistons in its iron bones, Storm Herald raised its immense bulk, meter by painful machine-squealing meter. The avenue shuddered as its bastion of a right foot pounded onto the road. The sound was loud enough that the nearby buildings, still untouched by orcish demolition charges, lost their windows in a blizzard of breaking glass. As the crystal rain fell to the scarred streets below, the Imperator raised its weapons, standing once more, defiant.
Shields up!
The crone of Invigilata demanded.
Void shields active, my princeps, responded Valian Casimir.
Make ready the heart.
Plasma reactor reports all systems at viable integrity, my princeps.
Then we move.
The chamber shuddered with a familiar rhythm as the god machine took its first step. Then a second. Then a third. Throughout the metal giant's bones, hundreds of crew members cheered.
We walk.
The ancient woman turned in her tank, looking at the tall knight once more.
I heard you, she told him. As I was dying, I heard you calling me.
Grimaldus removed his filthy helm. Although he didn't look a day over 30, his eyes told his true age. Like windows into his thoughts, they showed the weight of his wars.
There is a story of my father, he said to Zaha.
Your father?
Rogel Dorn, the Emperor's son.
The Primarch, I see.
It is a tale of a once strong brotherhood broken by Horus the Betrayer. Rogel Dorn and Horus were close before the Great Heresy. None of the Emperor's sons were bonded as truly in the years before the malignant darkness took hold of Horus and his kin.
I am listening.
She smiled, knowing how rare this moment was. To hear a warrior of the Adeptus Astartes speak of their gene-sire's life outside of their chapter's secret rituals.
It has always been told among the Black Templars that when the two brothers crusaded together, they would compete for the greater glory. Horus was legendarily hungry for triumph, while my father was, it is told, a more reserved and quiet soul. Each time they made war together, they were said to have made an oath in blood,
Clasping hands, they would each swear that they would stand until the final day dawned. Until the end, they would say.
That is a touching legend.
More than that, Princeps. Tradition. It is our most binding oath, spoken only between brothers who know they will never see another war. When a Templar knows he will die, it is the promise he gives to his brothers that he will stand with honor until he can no longer stand at all. She said nothing, but she smiled. Yes, I called you back to this war.
He nodded, his gentle eyes fixed upon her bionic replacements.
Because you made a similar oath to me. Promises like that, they matter more than anything else in life. I could not let you die in shame.
Until the end, then.
Until the end, Zaha.